Welcome to ID Podcast.
Thank you for joining us on the show today. If you are a longtime listener, welcome back. If you're new to the show, thank you for coming. You are in the right place to learn to improve your relationship, whether you're single, married, or dating, or struggling. If you're struggling, you're certainly in the right place. So thank you for tuning in.
Yes. And if you are new to the show, I'm Sarah and...
Yeah, I'm Chase. We forget to introduce ourselves, but I feel like a fair amount of the people know us. But if you don't...
But if you don't...
Yeah. We are married, have been for what? 2.5 years.
2.5 years.
Been together for like 8, and we have a 2.5-year-old daughter. And we started this podcast in order to get relationship advice for ourselves before we got married. We didn't really see what we wanted in the podcastosphere, as I call it, out there. There wasn't really anything available that appealed to us. So we're like, let's make our own. And here we are, 150-something episodes in, and we are loving getting the information for ourselves and giving it to you guys. And today is no different, where we got some great stuff to share with you from Dr. Joe Court. And Joe is the author of 4 books. He specializes in couples therapy, sex therapy, and mixed orientation relationships. And as I mentioned, he is a PhD and a therapist. So Joe gives us, he goes by Joe. I know it's a little informal to call the doctor, but gives us some great information today on pornography and how to deal with it and navigate porn use in a relationship, particularly from the side of if one partner discovers the other partner looking at porn, and maybe you don't already have an open conversation about pornography, then sometimes this can create problems. So Joe gives us some great tips to navigate it.
Yeah, so whether you have just recently found your partner's porn stash, or maybe porn is already a part of your relationship, we talk about a lot of different dialogues and conversations that you can have with your partner so that everything is out in the open and you can have a healthy relationship by communicating with each other. And one of the things that Joe talks about in the episode is creating a contract. So we'll go into it with more detail, but just like you would create a contract, a business contract, we've talked about contracts before on the show, but creating a contract in regards to porn usage in your relationship.
Yeah, it's basically an agreement so that you are on the same page. And this is, we are definitely a sex positive podcast. So porn use is perfectly fine. And it's about being more open sexually, and you can take your relationship to the next level. You don't need porn in your relationship, but it's just about talking about your sexuality, talking about your fantasies, your desires. So many times we don't do that, and that it's that lack of communication. It may not even necessarily be hurting the relationship. It can certainly, but it's not allowing you to flourish and to take your relationship to the highest level. So a lot of great stuff from Joe today. And as always, we appreciate you guys listening. Enjoy today's show.
Enjoy the show, guys. Today's show is brought to you by our Hood River Couples Retreat. Join us in Hood River, Oregon this summer, July 28th through August 2nd. The retreat is built to be the ultimate vacation for couples looking to have fun, try new things, and build a stronger relationship in paradise. We'll be doing activities like waterfall hikes, rafting, wine tastings, and so much more. For more information, visit our website at idopodcast.com/hoodriver. Hi, Joe. Thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Joe, we've given our listeners a bit of your history. Why don't you take a minute, tell us about yourself and why you enjoy helping people improve their relationships?
I think it comes from my childhood. I had grew up in a family of divorce and high conflict divorce, actually. And I think I made a decision early on as I was a child and then became a therapist that I'm just invested in helping couples, even if they don't stay together, be able to maintain some kind of friendly interaction, especially when there were children. So I've just always wanted to be work with couples.
Well, we are definitely going to help a lot of couples today with our topic of what to do when you find your spouse. It doesn't have to be the male or the female particularly, but looking at porn and talking about this. Obviously, that's a specific situation, but we'll talk about this in a broader context. Obviously, with the internet, porn is more and more widely available. I mean, it's in the palm of our hands with the cell phone. Let's talk about maybe first how pornography is affecting relationships and what its role can be in a relationship.
Yeah, so one thing I always like to start out with, people, when I start talking about porn and relationships, people get sidetracked with, are you talking about child porn? Are you talking about human trafficking porn? And I want to make a really clear distinction that I'm not talking about either one of that type of porn. I know nothing about that. That's a different subset of porn that should be handled by, sex offender treatment providers. I'm talking about the low-hanging fruit of the kinds of porn that can just be grabbed easily off the internet, which would not necessarily be those two types of porn. And so I just like to say that right away, because people they hear the word porn and sometimes they have their own projection and their own reaction around it. But given that, I forgot your question.
Yeah, no, that's an important distinction for sure, because those are serious issues that should be addressed by a professional. But how the other porn, just the mainstream or like more mainstream legal porn, is affecting modern day relationships and how it can be used. It's not always a bad thing, but just what the negative results can be and how we can just best deal with it.
Right. So then we had the governor of Utah come out and say that we are in a porn health crisis. And then John Gottman, a longtime research, who I have a lot of respect for, research marital therapist, came out and agreed that we have a porn health crisis. And but the problem is, I don't agree with that at all, because if that were true, you'd see that porn health crisis in gay and lesbian couples, and you do not. You only see it in heterosexual couples. And my argument back to that is, it's not the porn, it's the porn illiteracy, it's the lack of sexual health conversations amongst couples in talking about porn. So they come into my office and they start having she finds his porn. She discovers it. It looks nothing like her, and she has no, it's a world that she had no idea about. So she has a reaction, which is totally normal to have her reaction, whatever it is. And then what I find out, and then she says, I want a porn-free home. I don't want this in our life. But the problem is, and this I got this from Marty Klein, who's a very famous sex therapist, who says, couples fight over contracts they never made. And I'd say this to my couples, is that, did you have a contract around porn and porn use? Did you have a conversation? And pretty much 99% of the straight couples, at least, that come in to my office say, no, we did not. And so then we start developing a contract. But to say that somebody's right or wrong over a contract that was never made isn't going to work.
That's a good point, and there is a lot to unpack here. It's interesting that the governor of Utah and John Gottman, who we definitely cite a lot, saying that we have a porn health crisis, but not seeing that in gay and lesbian couples. And I don't have a huge body of research. I just have my experience in a relationship and in Western society, and it doesn't seem like. I agree with you. It doesn't seem like it's this porn crisis. It's a sexuality crisis in being able to openly talk about our sexuality, because we've had past shows and discussions where it is it's so taboo, and particularly in the U.S., and because you don't find it nearly as much in let's say Spain or Brazil or more.
Yep.
Sexual cultures where, all the way down to sex ed in you know, higher education to bringing that into the adult relationship. So I definitely agree with you. And so how can we, someone that has such a negative view of porn, and certainly it can be a problem in a relationship if it's not dealt with correctly and communicated about, but
totally.
How can we address, like, just people's, I guess, initial repulsion when they hear, oh, my partner's looking at porn, and they might feel betrayed or something like that?
Yeah, so this is what I do. So what I say right away is, I don't do it necessarily in this order because couples come in and they're very upset. Often women will say, it feels like I found him in bed with another woman. That's how personal it feels to her. And I understand that from women I've treated over the years saying that, you know, the way women are socialized, that they're comparing themselves to the porn in a negative way, that they feel like we've been taught it's a cultural myth that we should be everything to our partner. So when we find them looking at porn, now I'm not everything to you. And it starts breaking down and challenging in negative ways. But it's okay because they're negative beliefs. They're erroneous beliefs anyways. What I start with the couple is, now you've discovered you have erotic differences. And, you know, we don't talk about that in our culture. We don't talk about that in relationships. We talk about, okay, we're having sex, we're doing things that we enjoy, but what about the erotic differences, the things that get you aroused that don't get me aroused? And often what happens is when you learn this and it doesn't match your values or your comfort level, then people have a disgust response. So usually, again, I'm not just making sweeping generalizations, just happens to be that I see more straight couples and the woman is upset about it, she is having a disgust response because of the erotic differences she's now aware of between her and her boyfriend or husband. And then that becomes the place that I want them to talk. If the therapist or myself jump in and make it about the porn, you've lost the couple. You cannot help them because it's not about the porn. It's about what the porn has brought up for them.
So how would you start that conversation, that dialogue with your clients, for example, to talk about the differences in their erotic viewpoints or what they like in a relationship? How do you start that dialogue so maybe the male or the female, whoever's looking at porn, can say, hey, this is what I really like, and maybe the other person will agree or not agree, but at least the discussion is starting.
Yes, which I love, right? So I first try to get away from pathologizing because a lot of women will say, you're either a sex addict or you're a pervert. And I'm not staying married to a pervert, but if you're a sex addict and you need help, then to give him an eroticectomy, basically, you know, get rid of that whole erotic. And I say, I jump right in and I say, that's not what's necessarily going to be helpful for the two of you. We need to not pathologize this, but to understand. This is a conversation that didn't happen when you first got together. For gay couples, gay male couples, they talk openly right in the ad, their personal ad, what they get into, what they like sexually. It's culturally permissive to do that. In straight culture, it's not that way. Couples aren't doing that. And so I kind of do some education there is what I do and try to non-pathologize the situation so that, and then I work with her reactivity because it makes sense she feels this way. It's shocking. She can't help how she feels. So I help her regulate herself better and help him have empathy for her that this happened and what she's going through. Because a lot of straight men, this is what they do. When she finds his porn, and she's very upset, and she'll even have a betrayal response, like it's a trauma for her, really. Understandably, he doesn't want that for her. That's not the goal of watching porn. The goal of watching porn is he likes watching porn for whatever reasons. And that's what we have to figure out in therapy. So what he often does is say, okay, I won't do this anymore. I'm sorry. I see you're hurt. Please, I'll just shut it down. It'll never happen again. I don't need porn. I just need you. That's what he believes in that moment, but it isn't true. And then eventually he goes back to porn and then she finds it again. And now it's not about the porn at all. Now it's about the lie in the room. You lied to me. So I tell my couples early on when straight men do this, I say, I really urge you not to do this because you probably are going to go back to watching porn. And why does it have to be one person's right and one person's wrong and one person's the police and the other person is the what's the opposite of the police? You know, the person who's in charge. You know, why can't this just be a conversation, an uncomfortable conversation, but a conversation?
It is an interesting topic in its, I guess, from an anthropological perspective. I think it's fascinating as a culture, because this isn't a problem, like I said, in cultures that are more open sexually. So I think I'd like to maybe talk a little bit about that, because I think if we can understand the root of our feelings, then maybe it's going to be easier to navigate when you have that discuss response. And I personally think there's so much shame around sexuality, and that we have a sex negative culture. And so, like, as a young man, if you feel like you're like breaking the law the first time you look at a Playboy, you know, and then more explicit pornography, and it's like as natural as breathing, sex is. And now we just have this ability to be stimulated by other images, but that's been going on for thousands of years. I mean, there's paintings I like to know like the real history, but I'm sure there's like cave art that depicts pornography. You know what I mean? Like,
yes. So
I think if we can frame it that way, and that, like, just on an individual level, and if it's your partner, if you can be like, look, this is as natural as them breathing. Like, this isn't something that they need to be fixed or that's wrong. And changing the discussion, obviously, that's a much bigger thing we need to tackle through education. And hopefully, you know, we can move in that direction over the coming years, but to be a sex positive culture. But I think framing that in your mind, if you're out there and our listener is like devastated that they've like pornography is this terrible thing, and you can't, it's, you know, I don't want to negate their feelings of betrayal, but I think if you can understand the root of where this is coming from, and that it's actually very natural, then it's going to be easier to like open up that communication.
Just like it is, it's understood. It's actually, sometimes I'll call it female privilege in the therapy room, where women get, it's really geared toward the woman. Like, so think about this. It's sort of a non-issue that women are reading Twilight, and watching the movies and reading the books and Shades of Grey. And they're now starting to call that. And actually there's something called, I always forget the name of this. It's fiction. I don't want to say fan fiction. It's something where women will take a story and they write it out online and they sexualize a Harry Potter, a movie, some movie that's not sexual, Star Wars, and they'll turn it into something sexual. This has been going on for years for women. Forget what it's called. Fandom. That's what it's called, I think. I don't know. But what they're now starting to call all that is cliterature. And they're saying this is female porn for women. And what's different about it is more relational. It has a storyline. There are two people that are connected. And so we sort of go, oh, well, that's okay. I mean, that it's relational. But when men look at porn, men don't want necessarily a storyline. They're not looking for to write it out. They're looking for the raw action between the two, and that's pathologized. So in some ways, the argument around porn is pathologizing male sexuality and privileging female sexuality. And I don't like that up-down position. I like to look at how are both the man and the woman equal in this. It's just languaged differently.
Certainly. And this is another, you know, we need like 10 podcasts to unpack the differences between men and women. No. But it's certainly interesting in that cliterature. That's we'll have to go online and try to find the Harry Potter version or Star Wars. But yeah, men and women are different, and that's an interesting observation. Not prioritizing one or the other, like saying explicit, you know, internet porn, a video is a worse than the literature. Neither of them are bad. Like, we are expressing ourselves sexually, and so we could just go back and forth on this, because I think it's super interesting, but I think we've laid kind of a good foundation for that background as brief as we did. Maybe we can talk about like the nuts and bolts of, okay, we porn is in the relationship, and it was either talked about openly before or it was discovered on accident and it's a surprise to the partner. If it's a surprise and the man or the woman is having betrayal feelings, what is the first thing they can do or talk about with their partner to navigate forward in a good way?
All right, good question. So first thing would be to help her regulate and understand, okay, this is happening, that this is not about her, and how to help her understand that men, I help them educate that this is apples and oranges. Men may have the best marriage and the best sex life, and they're looking at porn at the same time, sort of normalizing this, that it's his way of getting variety and novelty, and that we can't be everything to our partners. It's impossible. That even when she's reading her romance novel, she's imagining herself with this other man in the book, and that's not a betrayal to the relationship, even if it feels like that. But then I have a whole thing around helping people understand why the porn she'll find is so upsetting to her. Like, what does this mean? I don't want him treating women like this. I don't want this kind of, it might be aggressive. It might be, you know, violent. It might be just outside of her comfort zone. And what I do is help people understand, where do these fantasies come from? Most of us, if we get honest enough about our fantasies, can understand the roots of them from our childhood, that most of what we think about and get aroused by comes from childhood. Things have gotten eroticized. And so, and I can give you examples of that, and I tell my couples some of these examples so that she can have more compassion and he can have more compassion toward himself about where this came from, that it's not some sick thing, it comes from some purposeful thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Do you mind giving us an example?
Yeah, how honest can I be on here? I mean, as I know it's a podcast, but I won't be rude, but can I use tough sexual language?
We'll just mark it as explicit if necessary.
Okay, yeah, you may have to. Okay, so I had this one man, and he really was wanting to be in relationship, and he would date, but he would find himself more compelled to be with women in hookups where he was receiving oral sex. And he would want to stop doing that because he really wanted to date, but he didn't want all these hookups. That's what he thought. But the hookups were really, really important, and getting the oral sex was really important. Well, that doesn't tell you anything. So he's getting oral sex. That could be in so many different ways. Is it relational? Is it objectifying her? Is he objectified? Is he involved in the oral sex, getting it? Is he working with her? Is she just servicing him? There are so many questions about, you know, the details of what he's into that arouse him. And everybody will have a different arousal interest in getting oral sex. For this guy, what he liked was it being very involved in oral sex, to the point where he would be thrusting into her mouth and then pulling in and out more aggressively with her permission. It's all consensual. And the peak erotic moment for him was when she couldn't breathe, those 2 seconds when he was inside, down in her throat, and then he pulled out. So this can be a very erotic fantasy. It's consensual. There's nothing pathological or wrong, but it's interesting to me. Like, where does that interest come from? How did he get that arousal interest? When we look back at his family, he was a child. He told me, he said, I was loved. I said, I asked as a therapist, how were you loved? I was given food, shelter, and clothing. And they made sure I went to school. And I said, that's great. That's great custodial care. And you can get that in foster care. So I'm glad you had that. And I'm not saying you weren't loved. But above and beyond, children need to know that they're loved above and beyond that. How, you know, did they put your report card on the fridge? Did they tell you were special? Did they take a day away and just spend it with you? He said, no, it was none of that. I just had what I told you. And I said, well, I'm not a parent, but when parents talk to me, they say to me, their children take their breath away. Your parents, you didn't take their breath away. But what you do erotically is you take the woman's breath away. So you've righted the wrong. You've gone from victim to victor in that moment. And when he heard this and made this connection, it was profound. He started crying because he realized, not again to pathologize the erotic, but to understand where it came from. And so that began his work of, can he spend more time trying to take a woman's breath away, not just through oral sex, but through other ways? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is an interesting story, and one that highlights that the complexity of our fantasies and of our minds, and how much of who we are is formed in early childhood, and that goes, you know, we talk about it a lot on the show, how we relate to our partner, our attachment style, and then all the way down to our deepest sexual fantasies. And I think what our listeners and myself, what we can get from that is that, yeah, like on first glance, you might say, oh my gosh, like that is, especially again, going back to our kind of uptight sexual society. But then you go like, look, this isn't, like you said, it's not some pathological like craziness. There are deep-seated roots to this. And I think when you're in a relationship, certainly understanding this for yourself, but then talking through it with a therapist and then talking through it with your partner, because your partner might be like initially like, whoa, like this is wrong. And it's like, well, you know, and you can work through those things, but communicating around it is going to make you both happier and truer to yourself.
Crucial.
So what are some other major issues that you see popping up once this is out in the open between a couple? Are there any things that make it harder for one partner or the other to accept and that they really get stuck on?
Before we continue on, we're going to take a short break to tell you about our sponsors. Today's episode is sponsored by FabFitFun. If you haven't heard of FabFitFun, it's a seasonal subscription box with full size, I repeat, full size beauty, fashion, fitness, and lifestyle products. The box retails for $49.99, but it always has a value of over $200. I haven't received my summer box yet because it's not yet revealed, but I am dying to get it. And we're actually going back to Florida in a couple weeks, and it'll be just in time to get my box. And I cannot wait to share the items with you guys. In last season's box, just to give you an idea, they had products like Free People Eye Mask, beauty and skincare products from Kate Somerville and Tarte, a clutch by Rachel Pathy, and a ceramic mug by Aisha Curry, and so much more. I spent like an hour on YouTube looking at all the reveal videos just because I'm so excited to get my box. So if you want to get your summer box, go to fabfitfun.com and use the promo code IDO and you'll get $10 off your box, only making it $39.99. Again, that's fabfitfun.com and use the promo code IDO to get $10 off.
Oh, they just really get stuck on... They want to go back to the porn. They want to go back to, and I try to say, what is the porn bringing up for you? So, like, I talk about this other couple where I call them the tiny waist couple. He was erotically interested. And by the way, we have a sexual orientation to whom we're attracted to, male, female, both, neither. You know, some people are into gender fluidity, but whatever you're attracted to, whom you're attracted to. Then we have an erotic orientation, the things that get us off, the things that arouse us, okay? That's a whole separate thing. And so for this particular couple, he was a heterosexual guy, interested in women. His erotic orientation was women with tiny waists. He met his wife. She had a tiny waist. They had great sex. They had a great romance. They married. Everything continued being great sexually. She had babies. Her waist expanded. They continued having great sex. They had a five times a week, different positions. They had sexual health conversations around being sexual with each other. She went into menopause. Her waist expanded further. Still had great sex. She never even thought there was any problem because there wasn't until she found his porn, which was riddled with women with tiny waists. And so then she, you know, says he's a sex addict. They come in crisis. And, you know, she's crying in my office saying, what does this say about me? Because that's really the issue. What does this say about me? And my answer as a therapist, in the most respectful way, is nothing. It says nothing about you. He was still wanting your body. He still enjoyed your body. He still wanted you sexually. But now we have to turn, and it's not this easy, by the way, right? This is many, many sessions. We have to turn this toward how you feel about your body and how women are conditioned to look at these women in porn or in the media and say, if I don't look like that, something's wrong with me. Where men, we get those messages too, but we don't take them to heart the way women do, where it's not pushed upon us in the same way. That becomes, and then having him have compassion for her around that.
As a woman, I completely can see how that can be so hard on a relationship. And I think one important thing to remember, even if you get to a point with your partner where, you know, they've found the porn, they discussed it, they've maybe created their contract, she's okay with it. I think the important thing to remember is that porn is not real life. So you can't compare like your body to the people in the porn or your sex life to the people in the porn because it's not realistic. And I think viewing it that way can be really unhealthy for the relationship.
So well said. And what did you say that made me think about comparing? I can't remember, but it's really true. I agree with you.
Thank you. And, you know, I did want to touch on one more thing. You mentioned about the contract and not having the contract, and couples that do, it goes so much more smoothly. What does a contract look like for our listeners who don't have one and maybe they want to create one for their relationship?
Yeah, these are great questions. So how it looks is this. So I'm going to look at porn. I want to look at porn. So let's talk about what kind of porn. Is it going to be just still images? Is it going to be movies? Is it going to be point of view porn, where in point of view porn you're watching somebody who looks like they're talking to you, but it's not. If they're on camera, it's a film, it's videotaped. Is it somebody I can contact and say, hey, I'd like you to talk to me like this. Would you make a video like this? Can it be live, where there's actually a person? They might be in Romania, but there's somebody I'm back and forth with. Can it be somebody that I watch that watches me? And can it be webcam sex? So you're having like all these conversations about what's okay and what's not okay. And just because someone says no doesn't mean it's no. And just because someone says yes doesn't mean it's yes. It's a difficult conversation. But and I've worked with couples where they say, I'm uncomfortable. And then we talk about why are you uncomfortable? What does betrayal mean to you? What's the line that's crossed that makes you feel betrayed or insecure? And then they develop that contract, whatever that is, an agreement upon what they do. And if one or both don't follow some of those things, I don't call it cheating. I don't like that word. It's so negative. It's a break in the relationship contract. So somebody's broken that contract, and now we need to talk about what that means.
And those are good to set in place for all areas of the relationship, like going to visit the in-laws, talk about how you're going to set up an agreement. This works for me, this doesn't. And things are just going to go much more smoothly if you're setting expectations, managing expectations, and putting those things in place ahead of time. One of the things I want to touch on that you mentioned earlier that I think is really important is that we can't be everything for our partner. I think so much of what we are taught and socialized about is that you find the one in your soulmate, and that they're going to fulfill like all of our needs. And that's just an unrealistic expectation to put on one person. And I think if you can realize that, and you're not going to be so offended if your partner's looking at porn or if your partner's hanging out with their friends because they need to socialize outside of the couple. I think it's an important thing to emphasize.
It really is. I love what you're saying. And this is even true without porn. Let's say, so then couples, they don't talk about their erotic interests. They kind of do things that they like doing, but there might be more. There might be kinky. They might have positions they want to do. They might want to be more voyeuristic, exhibitionistic, and whatever. And so they have these erotic differences, and then they need to be talking about that without saying, well, you like that, but I'm not going to do that for you, and you can't go get that anywhere else, even online. And that's so unfair. It's like, you may feel that way, and you can say that, but that can't be the end of the story. That's not operating as a couple. That's what I try to help couples do. I never used to do this. I used to side with the most uncomfortable partner. And I was a sex addiction therapist, actually, and I regret it every day of my career of being that, because I was siding. I would look at this as the person with the sexual, the person that hurt the other one through sexuality was the sex addict. And that's not true. Yes, there's a hurt partner in the room, but that doesn't mean there's something wrong with the person who's engaging in sexuality that's affecting the relationship.
So where do you, this is getting to like a bigger conversation of maybe like open relationships or different versions of coupledom, if you want to call it that. But where do you draw the line, or how do you navigate that if one partner is like, hey, I want to explore some sort of kinky sex, and the other partner's not into it. And like you said, it's kind of unfair to say, well, you can't have that. But then it's like, well, isn't that what monogamy is all about? And these conversations are changing, and it might just be that platforms like podcasts make it seem like it's more widely, talked about or accepted. But how do you navigate that?
That's a great question. So then I'll say to the couples, why aren't you open to this? What does it bring up for you that he wants to do this or she wants to do this? I love Dan Savage. He's a sex educator, advice columnist, and writer. And he says, you really need to be good giving and game for your client. So be good enough sexually, be giving and be game, sort of up for anything, and be open to things. So like, I've dealt with men who enjoy being anally penetrated. And so they get the nerve to tell their female partner, and she's disgusted. Does this mean you're gay? Does this mean, you know, it makes me feel like you're less masculine? Okay, let's address all of that. And he still likes anal penetration. So what would it mean for you to put a strap-on on or use a sex toy and insert in him and provide him pleasure? I don't know. I'm disgusted. I can't do it. I actually had couples like this where we deal with what it brings up for her, the shame that he feels by just sharing this with her. And then, you know, the bravery that it took for him to say it, the bravery it takes for her to be even willing. Because most women... And most people who are, I shouldn't say most women, it's just my practice. Most people want to shut it all down if they're not into it. And that's not an option if you have a partner who really wants this. Because then that means good sex for one partner, bad sex for the other. That's not fair. This should be that conversation. What I have found is if the partner who doesn't really want to do this embraces it and says, I'll try it. And I always say, stop it. Abort immediately if it becomes out of your values or you feel violated or whatever. But can you give it at least some thought and some attempts? And I've had many, many women come back and say that they tell me they were never more aroused than when they engaged in this behavior that a partner wanted and found a part of their sexuality they never knew was there.
I think the broader theme here is being open with your partner and intimate, because that's like the highest level of intimacy, maybe if you think about, you know, sharing your deepest, and I don't want to say darkest because that has a negative connotation, but like these, and some people don't even explore that. But certainly like being very introspective, and then you have these feelings that you didn't even know were there. But then I think our tendency is to not tell our partner for fear of shame. And again, going back to what our culture sort of values and the sex negativity, and then that's an area of your relationship that's closed off, and an important area. And it's not that you will have necessarily a bad relationship if it's closed off, but this is about taking your relationship to the next level, being more intimate and more open. And it's not easy to do, but if one partner can listen with empathy and compassion, and you might not be comfortable with it, but making sure you're not reacting with disgust and shame towards your partner, then you can move forward and open up areas of your relationship that are going to grow even deeper and more intimate, and can be really a beautiful thing.
Totally. Yes. Well said.
We had a listener write in the other day and was curious on our opinion on this. And basically her story was that she had recently gone and had some jealousy issues with her boyfriend because she found out he was using Instagram to look at pictures of girls in bikinis and those types of pictures. So it's not pornography, but there's definitely a element of maybe she didn't quite trust him, that he was not being honest, and she was jealous. So how can one address a situation like that?
So, and what was he doing again?
He was looking at pictures of girls in bikinis on Instagram.
Oh, I see.
So social media pictures.
Yeah, it wasn't even porn, just social media.
Yeah, but she kind of felt betrayed that he wasn't, that he was looking at other girls.
And so I would look at her and say, and I'm very neutral in the best way we could, what is it bringing up for you? You know, and so she might say, well, it makes me think that he wants that body. He doesn't like my body. You know, and he would be in the room. We would be talking about how that is probably not true. What's true is he likes her body and that body, and he has a lot of different interests. These are some of those interests. And I would really be digging in for her about what it's bringing up, because it's whatever those issues are going to be unique to her.
That's a good point. And as a guy, and guys and girls are different, it is so easy to get trapped in social media in general, but then especially you'll be scrolling through social media and you see a picture of a pretty girl, and then all of a sudden you're looking, you know, the feed is designed to give you more of those pictures. And then I think we can fall into this trap of in our minds, like the grass is always greener. Like, oh, like she's good looking, man, I wonder what it'd be like. And it's all just, we're not necessarily acting on anything, but it's just like, it's fantasizing, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it, but in a broad sense. But I think it's important, like even personally, to keep in mind that, like, yeah, but this is not real life. And the tendency to be like, well, the grass is always greener. Like, ooh, if I was single, I'd be having more sex, or, you know, like, look at her and look at her. It's like, it's easy to, at least for me, to get into that mode instead of being like, well, no, like that's not the reality. And just to try to keep that in check.
Yes. And then these are the conversations that to have, instead of just saying, well, he should be able to look at it and she should just tolerate it. Maybe, but that conversation. The other is, she doesn't want you to. So what's that like for you to the partner, that she doesn't want you to? And what does that bring up for you? And what's your erotic interest? What's her erotic interest? Sometimes it's about historic sexual abuse, and it could be on both parts. Her historic sexual abuse, she feels violated, so it feels like a betrayal, and it brings her back to having been sexually abused. 1 in 4 women have been sexually abused as little girls. For him, looking at pornography, let's say it is compulsive. So we've been talking about it in normal ways, normative ways, but what about when it's compulsive? It's taking away from the relationship. He's doing it instead of her. He's watching it instead of her. That can be his own early sexual abuse that's been acting out. I call it returning to the scene of the sexual crime. So he's reenacting his abuse by compulsively feeling owned by the pornography. He might be watching pornography that is similar to how he was abused. 1 in 6 boys have been sexually abused. So you want to be, I'm looking at all these factors and ruling them out.
Wow, those are pretty shocking statistics. And yeah, it is, we are complicated beings, and certainly our sexuality is a big part of who we are, and certainly in relationships. And it is only going to get more and more complicated and interesting with the advent of better technology and virtual sex. And I mean, we'll have you on in 5 years, and guaranteed there's going to be like some crazy virtual sex out there that's like you're having real sex. And then the line gets a little bit blurrier, but a lot of these same things will apply, like that open communication and being introspective. So we'll look forward to that future conversation, Joe. But now we got to wrap up, and why don't we have you tell our listeners where they can find you online, and then we'll say goodbye.
Great, thank you. So they can go to my website. It's www.joecourt, J-O-E-K, KORT.com. And I've been doing a lot more writing. In fact, a recent article in July, I wrote about heterosexual couples in these very situations. It's called All in Sex and Love is Fair. And they can click on my articles and find it under sexuality. And so it's JoeCourt.com.
Perfect. Well, we'll be sure to link to your website on your show notes page on our website at idopodcast.com. And our listeners know to go there to check out all the great resources you've given us today. So thanks again for coming on the show. It was an excellent interview.
Thank you very much for having me. I love talking about this.
We hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. For more information and the links from the interview today, you can head on over to our website at idopodcast.com. Click on the podcast tab and it will be the first episode there. And while you're on our website, if you are interested in learning more information about our upcoming Hood River Couples Retreat, then click on the retreat tab and you'll be able to find all the information on the retreat. It's going to be at the end of July this summer, and we look forward to it with you guys. It's going to be an awesome couple days in Hood River. It's amazing there, so we hope you join us. And if you are on our website and you're looking for some resources or some tools for your relationship, we really encourage you to check out our 14-day Happy Couple Challenge. It's a free challenge where we send you a daily email for 14 days. And in each email is a doable challenge for that day to do within your relationship. And it's going to help you become stronger, more connected, more intimate. And we know that you're going to enjoy it. We've had some great feedback from all you guys who have done it, and we're so happy that it has helped you in your relationship. So again, all that information is on our website at idopodcast.com. Head on over there, and thanks so much for listening. Have a great day.